Okay, start now.
Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women. This is Edris Weiss interviewing Dr. Joseph Poyce on December the 12th, 1984. Dr. Poyce, would you prefer to be called Dr. or Mr.?
Whichever you find easy to use. I have no preference.
Oral history project that will begin beginning anyway.
All right, start right now.
Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Project 2. This is Edris Wise interviewing Mr. Joseph Poyce on December the 12th, 1984. Mr. Poyce, we would like to start at the very beginning of your life, long life, and have you tell us a little bit about your beginnings, your parents, and where you were born.
I was born in New York City. My parents were immigrants. My mother was from Russia, and my father was from Turkey. Although I do not believe that that his Turkish background went back very many generations. And I think they migrated originally to Argentina under a program which at that time, I think, might have been sponsored by, I think it was Baron Rothschild, and when they found their experience in Latin America was very disappointing, they then came to the United States and settled in New York City.
What year were you born?
1905.
And your parents, do you remember about the time that they immigrated to Argentina?
Oh, I'm rather hazy as to when they did migrate. I don't have the time. If that is, if that seems to be significant, I'll see whether I can reconstruct it.
I was just curious. You know. Also, which parts of Russia and Turkey they were from?
Well, my mother was from Odessa, and my father was from, at that time, called it Istanbul.
Mm-hmm. Did you have, or do you have, any sisters and brothers?
Well, I had seven sisters and brothers, of which there only two now survive. I have two brothers now living, one in San Diego and one in Tucson, Arizona.
You had seven brothers and seven sisters?
No, altogether.
Altogether, so there were how many of you?
There were eight. There were five brothers and three sisters.
And how old are the ones who are living now?
Well, I think one probably is about 80, let's see, but I think one would be approximately about 85, and the other would surely be 84. Maybe one is 86, one 84.
And what do they do?
Well, one is a physician, and interesting enough, the oldest one, or no, the one who's 84, still practices because he wants to keep his hand in as an internist, and he's a medical director of the senior citizens program, and the other is completely retired.
What is the doctor's name?
John.
Can you tell us a little bit about your home life when you were growing up with all those siblings?
Well, I was the youngest in the family, and I suppose encountered the problems which one does with a family such as ours, who perhaps where the parents had not fully adjusted to the American scene and still looked upon their native countries with a certain feeling of nostalgia.
What did your father do when he came to the United States?
I recall he was a merchant and had a grocery store.
In New York City?
In New York City, yes.
Do you know which area?
In the Bronx.
In the Bronx?
In the Bronx.
And was there a deeply religious atmosphere in your home?
No, my father was not particularly religious. My mother was quite observant, so that the dietary laws were observed in our home. Therefore, you might say my mother was the observant individual, My father was not particularly observant. I, as a younger person, was quite observant.
Tell us a little bit about the discipline in your home at the time.
Well, it was rather, I suppose, difficult to describe precisely, because there was quite an age differential between my siblings and myself as the youngest, so that my oldest brother was old enough to be my father, and my oldest sister was old enough to be my mother. And in effect, my sister was in the New York City school system, in a sense, took over something of the maternal role, so far as I was concerned. And I think the discipline really emanated from her.
How old was your mother when you were born, do you know?
Well, I think she was just about at the end of childbearing age, if I recall.
And was there a lot of intellectual and cultural atmosphere stressed in your home?
No, I don't think so.
What about education?
Well, education, of course, as Jewish family would do, an immigrant family did stress education, although, and for example, that gave my oldest sister the role of leadership, because at that time in New York, the daughter of an immigrant family who could enter the New York City school system was placed on something of a pedestal, so education was stressed. My brother had gone to medical school, and so far as the others were concerned, because the family tended to become a little fragmented, my oldest brother settled in Texas. In fact, he was, in a sense, something of a pioneer in the oil business, and was more of a Texan than he was a person, say, living in New York. And so at that end of the scale, aside from my sister, there wasn't that much in the way of education. So far as my older sister, my brother, and I, the education was stressed. In other words, a lot that depended upon the economics of the family existence.
So the three of you then graduated from college?
Yes.
The three?
Only the three, that's correct.
Can you tell us some of the most poignant things that you can remember from your days in grade school, high school?
Well,
your teachers?
It's rather difficult for me to recall my grade school experiences. I do remember the attitude which pupils at that time in, say, the New York City school system had with respect to their teachers, which was one of respect and sometimes almost apprehension, because the discipline was very, very well maintained in the grade school. I can't say I look back upon the experience with any enthusiasm.
What were your favorite subjects?
Well, in grade school, it's difficult to tell. I suppose English. I suppose I can identify my subjects better in a high school curriculum, where it is more sharply, at that time, more sharply divided. Of course, the way now schools are organized, you do have more of a subject breakdown in the elementary schools. In those days, you had one teacher, really, for most every, for practically all the subjects. You didn't have the specialization you now have in many of the grade schools. So therefore, I can identify subjects of particular interest a little better so far as my high school experience is concerned. And there, high school, I like English was very much a favorite, and also the social sciences, economics, that time what they called civics. There I did outstandingly so far as the subjects were concerned, I suppose, and followed something by history. Those I would consider my favorite subjects.
Can you tell me a little bit about the health in your family? Did your parents live a long life?
Well, there was some problem at school. My father had something of a heart condition. I would not call it a regular coronary, but he would have these episodes in which apparently probably felt a rapid heart, which then I suppose caused some sense of panic. But he must have lived until the age of 75, 76. My mother was an invalid in the sense of being an asthmatic. And later, as I learned, probably that had a psychogenic aspect to it. Because she was not a very happy woman, and I suppose her unhappiness had found expression in the fact that she suffered from asthma for many years, a condition which became increasingly worse with the passage of time. And of course, at that time, one did not know very much about psychosomatic medicine, and so it was treated as a regular physical ailment. But it definitely impaired her relationship, say, with a youngster such as myself.
Do you think she was unhappy because she never adjusted really to the United States?
And also perhaps the marital situation was not the happiest so far as she was concerned.
When you were growing up, what did you do for fun? Recreation?
I tended, as a boy in New York, to be somewhat introverted. We lived in neighborhoods where either you could participate, particularly the young years, you could participate in some of the gangs. Of course, we lived in the lower section of Bronx, which even at that time had something of gangs in the block or gangs in the neighborhood. And I kept somewhat aloof and was more interested in reading. I guess, that's right, I did belong to a Boy Scout troop, which intrigued me because I did have a love for the outdoors. And so of course I even regret it now that I never did participate very much in sports.
What kind of books did you like to read?
Well, I suppose books of adventure, books of on travel interested me a great deal.
Getting on to your college years, yeah. Where did you go to college?
I took my first 2 years at New York University, so-called Washington Square College of New York University. And then I was awarded a scholarship to Columbia University for the School of Business. I was recommended by the economics department of Washington Square College of NYU. But then one of my instructors, in fact, almost my favorite college instructor who had been at the University of Wisconsin, suggested that I might find it an interesting experience to attend a summer session at the University of Wisconsin. And I had received another scholarship from the New York State Chamber of Commerce, and I really borrowed from my sister so I could go to the University of Wisconsin at Madison for a summer session. And I went there, and the experience there was so exhilarating, first of all, being away from home and attending what I regard as a real college, as compared with going, with due respect to Greenwich Village, you see, New York University, Washington Square, just at the edge of Greenwich Village, and therefore that it didn't have the atmosphere of the University of Wisconsin. And once I was through with the summer session, I decided to transfer to the University of Wisconsin, much to the distress of my older sister, because to her, Columbia University was sacrosanct. To give up a scholarship to the University of Wisconsin, to Columbia University, that was absolutely unthinkable. But I decided, no, I liked the University of Wisconsin, and the New York State Chamber of Commerce permitted me to use their scholarship while I was attending the University of Wisconsin. So I took my...
Is that unusual?
Well, After all, I had obtained a scholarship on the basis of attending the School of Business.
In New York. But they allowed you to use that money for Wisconsin.
For the College of Arts and Sciences.
Yeah.
I entered the College of Arts and Sciences. But I guess they threw in the sponge and said there was no use.
How old were you when you entered college?
16.
And how old were you when you graduated?
20.
And then did you go on for a graduate degree?
Yes. Well, originally I started out with the thought I would go to law school. But interesting enough, I think I attended Harvard Law School for a month or two. And I did not find that it was much. I didn't like, well, you saw the paper, perhaps you saw the picture paper chase. You know, the rigidity, the toughness. And I couldn't stand that bulldozing and whatnot. And I've always been a somewhat independent individual, and I can't be obsequious or deferential to authority figures. And anyhow, I began to wonder, well, do I really want the law at that point, or don't I? So I said, no, I didn't. I thought I wanted to go to graduate school. The academic world at that time had an appeal for me. So I decided to switch, and I went to the University of Chicago for my master's degree. I entered the University of Chicago in January of 27.
And so what did you end up getting your master's degree in?
In political science. And then I followed that with, I got my PhD in political science.
Did you ever go to law school?
Yes, I did. After I had received my PhD and I was working for a management consulting firm in Chicago that specialized in advising governmental units, I realized that the practice of law or the legal field is so intimately tied in with government, with political science, particularly public administration, that I decided I wanted to I did want a law degree. At least I wanted to become a member of the bar. And so I ultimately attended what we call Chicago Kent College of Law. That time you could complete the law school in 3 years by going five nights a week. And I received my law degree and then was admitted to the Illinois bar.
So that you worked during the day and went to law school at night?
Yes, I worked for the consulting firm and went to law school at night.
What was the name of the consulting firm?
J.L. Jacobs and Company.
All right, before we get into your very jobs, and which are, I'm sure, prime interest, I'd like to go back a little bit and talk about your days at the University of Chicago and whether your marriage, when you got married at that time, or whatever.
Very good. All right. I received my master's degree at the University of Chicago in 1927, and then because I had been there only at the University of Chicago was on the so-called quarter system. I'd been there only three quarters. There was a question whether I could get a fellowship. And of course, I was known at the University of Wisconsin, so I decided I'd go back to the University of Wisconsin as a teaching assistant. And so I went back to the University of Wisconsin in September of 27 and took my second year of graduate work, at the end of which I was married. My wife was a native of Madison, Wisconsin. And then the University of Chicago did award me a fellowship, and because of the prestigious nature of the University of Chicago, particularly in the field of political science, that was very attractive. So my wife and I then, my newly acquired wife, and I then went to, back to Chicago, well, she hadn't been in Chicago, but we went to Chicago, and I completed my work for the PhD in 29.
How did you meet your wife, and what is her name?
Her name was Rose Tomarkin, T-O-M-A-R-K-I-N, which had been sort of anglicized. The name had originally been Tomarchenko, T-O-M-A-R-C-H-E-N-K-O.
Is that Russian?
Russian, yes. And she was, as I say, that family had, again, migrated to Madison, Wisconsin, which, interestingly enough, had the first Jewish ghetto which I had ever seen, because there was a whole group of Jews that came from, and I never did find out exactly where the city was, a place called Kapulya, but they had almost migrated as a group to Madison, Wisconsin, and they had a self-contained Jewish community, which essentially was the Jewish ghetto, which I had never seen. I mean, it was sort of, you might say, a self-sufficient Jewish ghetto. My wife completed, I think, about 2.5 years at the University of Wisconsin, and then because of the, again, the economics within the family, she didn't go on to get a bachelor's degree, but then was appointed to a secretarial position at the state capitol, of course, in Madison, Wisconsin. And then when she accompanied me to Chicago, she worked in the business office of the University of Chicago.
Did you meet her when you were both students?
No, I never met her. She was already working as a secretary, and I think it was her sister who introduced me to her. Well, I think I'd seen her on the campus, and the sister was then already married to a medical student, then introduced me to her.
Tell me a little bit more about the Jewish community in Madison. Where was it located? Do you remember exactly?
Well, in the southern part, I remember it was on what they called South Park Street, and the section was called Greenbush. You had a Jewish community, and on the edges of which, surrounded by an Italian community, where at that time, because Prohibition was still holding forth, and the Italian community was the... was really the core of the so-called bootlegging, and was an unusual situation because in this small city it was very much afflicted by criminal violence, as there were fights, I suppose, for the profits of the bootlegging industry. The Jewish community itself was ruled by my wife's uncle. He was a great poobah, so far as I was concerned, and he ruled with an iron hand.
His name Tamarkin also?
No. His name was Sinagub, S-I-N-A-G-U-B, because he was the brother of my wife's mother. And he was quite affluent and had a grocery store, which in essence was something of a, well, not quite a general store, it was more of a grocery store. And because of the Jewish power structure there, and also his brothers-in-law, who were, I guess, very successful grain merchants, seed merchants, they were very much a dominant Jewish group in Madison, Wisconsin.
How large a group was this? How many Jewish families do you think there were?
Oh, by the way, there was a book written by a rabbi on the Jewish community in Madison, Wisconsin. I borrowed it once, and I would say it must have been 100, 150 at least. It was quite a large group, which very strictly, of course, the older people, strictly Orthodox, many of them just lived, as I suppose, in some respects, as they had lived in the shtetl back in the old country. To me, it seemed paradoxical, coming from New York City, that this was a brand new experience. In fact, they would talk about the New York accent. I said, well, I must confess, when I come here, all I notice is a rising inflection you people have. I don't think I'm guilty of that. And I was amazed to find to find that there, and to me it was an eye-opener, and I must say the impact of it was, I came to Madison, Wisconsin as a very observant young man. In fact, I was observing kashrut and whatnot very, very strictly, and seeing some of the practices in the community very much weakened my orthodoxy at that point. In fact, generally had a very debilitating effect, let's call it, upon my religious attitudes, although later on I did swing back somewhat. But this was such a a new experience to me, and to see to be so close to a very self-contained, a very tightly structured Jewish community was, as I say, almost a startling experience for me, and had a tremendous impact upon me.
Give me an example of some of these experiences that you're referring to.
Well, I still remember that my wife's uncle, and here I don't feel I'm in any way desecrating the memory of my wife, because she detested her uncle even more than I did. I still remember how we went. We'd go through the pretense of Orthodoxy, and since there I was invited because her cousin, interesting enough, the son of this this uncle, and I were rather close. He was about 6-7 years older than I. He was an alumnus of the University of Wisconsin, so I would very frequently eat at their place, and particularly on a Shabbat, and I would see this uncle as he was saying his prayers and shaking himself, and supposedly it was the Sabbath, and of course you were not supposed to engage in any commercial activity. In fact, you're not supposed to have any money in your pockets. And I observed him. I noticed he was shaking back and forth with such vigor. Somebody would knock at the door and say, "Abe," somebody in the store, while he was still davening, expression, while he was still davening. Oh, they reach in his pocket and pull out the damn keys, and I thought, "Oh my God, what sort of religion is it?" So, little things like that, those sort of an episodic recital like that might seem like it's trivial, but see, for a person like myself who is very impressionable, that had quite an impact. And I noticed he would always give to charities, but always made sure he got these certificates. You see. In a small, you're probably unacquainted the way these small Jewish communities worked in the Midwest, but they would have these people who wandered around collecting for these causes. I have a hunch most went into their own pockets, but anyhow, that's the way they made a living. But they would visit these communities, foist themselves upon the population, and it was regarded as a mitzvah, you see, to house them, particularly over the Sabbath, because you couldn't tell them to move out of town on the Sabbath, because after all, they'd been there. Drive or whatnot, but I had always noticed that my wife's uncle made sure he got this little certificate that he contributed to this cause and whatnot, and he never did enjoy anything more than they would pull out these confounded certificates, and directly contrary, you know, to the admonition of Maimonides that the ultimate in charity is to do it on an anonymous basis. He contravened it. He was way at the other end, the other end of the spectrum, I can assure you. And of course, I coming in was sort of starry-eyed and very, as I say, extremely observant, because I had what they call him a Lamed in New York who instructed me. And for my bar mitzvah, and I studied afterwards with him. And by the way, and that's one thing, and here I guess it's sort of a break in continuity.
All right.
One of the big influences in my youth was the family of this Malamed, because they gave me affection and attention, which I sometimes didn't find in my own family, because.
What is a Malamed?
A Malamed is a person who instructs you, in the Jewish religion.
Not like a rabbi.
No, he doesn't have the status of a rabbi. He's supposed to know something. This man was not particularly learned, but he knew enough to prepare you for the bar mitzvah and to continue studies. But he did not have the status of a rabbi. No.
Getting back to the
Go ahead. You go ahead.
I wanted to just ask you one more question about the shtetl, as you referred to it in Wisconsin. Were these people mostly merchants, or were they farmers also?
No, they were not. There were some farmers in the northern part of Wisconsin, but these were people of Madison itself,
right.
And many of them were peddlers. They would go out into the community, you know, and. The wealthier people, you see, they were merchants, as I say. The Abe Sinagub had this grocery business. Some of them sold grain to the farmers, seeds to the farmers, and the wealthier people were the merchants. I think one or two had some small manufacturing businesses, but at the other end, many of them were peddlers or perhaps engaged in relative routine menial labor. Although I remember, let's say a few of them were in the junk business, which almost seems traditional.
Right.
What is it right now? Right now it's steel, isn't it?
I mean, they grew up to.
Yeah. But in the old days, some of these so-called steel businesses were basically the old-time junk business, just
right.
Surrounded with a little greater aura and dignity.
That's it.
And so that. And then, of course, the younger people, you see, with the fact that they were living in the university city.